What's up, y'all? I got a dance deal for you, Chicago. Hubbard Street Dance heats up the Harris Theater stage with its spring series of joy next week. Now, this is some of the most dynamic, cutting-edge contemporary dance made by the world's leading choreographers right here in Chicago. I'm excited for Echoes of Our Ancestors by Maria Torres, among other creators. But you can only catch it for 3 performances between May 17th and May 19th. Luckily, CityCast Chicago listeners can get tickets in any section for 20% off using code CityCast online or over the phone. Visit HubbardStreetDance.com for details and use code CityCast. Today on CityCast Chicago, calls to oust CTA's president grow louder, lawmakers debate extending school closure moratorium, and the Bears pitch a $4 billion stadium on the lake. Are we feeling it? To help me answer all of these questions, Block Club Chicago's Manny Ramos and Chalk Beat Chicago's Samantha Smiley. It's Friday, April 26th. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago's Talking About. Joining us on the Friday News Roundup. Welcome back to the podcast, Samantha Smiley.
Thank you for having me back.
Happy to have you here. And Manny Ramos, it's good to see you on the mic again, my friend.
What's going on? Glad to be here.
Every single Friday, if you are new to the podcast, we like to bring in some fantastic voices from across the city to talk about some of the biggest stories they were watching, the stories that need a little more attention. And we always finish every episode with some good news. But before we get started, all month long, we have had fantastic conversations about some of the best food offered in the city, whether we're talking about Chicago's fine dining scene, the best place to grab a glass or bottle of wine. We've talked food halls and the best vegan spots. And so I got to ask, starting with you, Manny, what is the best thing you ate this month in Chicago?
I got to say, there's this small mom and pop's Middle Eastern grill that's near my house. It's called Jerusalem Grill. Fantastic food there, constantly trying to eat there. So I would say that'd probably be the best thing I ate.
What's your go-to?
Oh man, I gotta say the shawarma, the chicken with the rice and hummus, like always hits.
Always. Samantha, I'm gonna kick it over to you. What about you? What was the best thing you ate in Chicago this month?
I don't know if it was the best thing, but I had it when I was really hungry and it was good. So I had chicken teriyaki, with rice and broccoli from Kuro
Ramen.
Yeah, ramen that's like close to Chinatown, close to Bridgeport. It's kind of like in that area where you don't know which neighborhood you're in. And I got it at like maybe 9 or 10 o'clock at night once I came back from a trip to Springfield. And it was so good.
Hey, the teriyaki chicken with the rice with the little broccoli on the side. I usually get the bang bang shrimp from Kuro too. And I like to get a little amazing lemonade. That's one of my late night spots. I ain't even gonna lie to you. Like I said earlier, every week we are talking about some of the biggest stories that happened in Chicago. And I mean, people have not been able to go a few days without talking about everything happening with the Chicago Bears, from a recent stadium announcement to finally getting these draft picks off. They have been dominating headlines. And Manny, I want to start with you. Because, you know, they weren't slick this week. They know having that number one pick meant a lot of people had a lot of goodwill and positive things to say about the Bears, a lot of energy around the Bears. And so they said, you know what? You know what people don't necessarily jump for joy about? Publicly subsidized stadiums. So maybe we should just put that news in the week as well and ride some of this draft goodwill. Manny, we got the mock-ups. We got some of the initial figures. What are the Bears proposing down by current Soldier Field?
Yeah, so the Chicago Bears unveiled a $4.7 billion plan to build a domed lakefront stadium. And they want you to know, they want you guys to know that it is the largest private investment in Illinois history. though they don't want to be fooled, you know, because Illinois taxpayers will be asked to cough up some money as well, about $1 billion or so, too. So Bears president Kevin Warren made this pitch, and it seems to have the full support of Mayor Brandon Johnson. This mm-hmm. came Wednesday afternoon. Both men try to paint this as a much needed development for the city of Chicago. To quote Johnson, he said, "It's a beautiful day, an honor to celebrate Bears' commitment to remaining the Chicago Bears." This is possible, Johnson said, because the Bears committed to doing three things, which was they wouldn't require new or increased taxes. It also needed to be a substantial private investment and have some sort of public use feature. The new stadium would go where the Waldron parking deck sits now, and the current stadium will be sort of turned into like this public space where, you know, high school kids can, you know, have their championship flag football tournaments or, you know, a baseball field, things like that. And like, you know, to what you just mentioned, you know, the pitch included some, you know, really stunning visuals of a large dome stadium that loomed over the lakefront.
I mean, Brandon Johnson has really kind of stood in a sense of confidence around this plan because he has tried to make it clear to Chicagoans, when I took this job, the Bears were already gone. It was already written on the wall that they were going to Arlington Heights. I said on the podcast many a times and said, yeah, I think it's a 90% chance that they are out of the city. And so this announcement, at least from Johnson's perspective, is a bit of a win, right? There are so many questions left to ask. How are we going to pay for this? What does this mean for the Lakeshore? Is Friends of the Park going to sue to stop this? Right. A lot of questions, but his initial framing of this is a political win for him, that I sat down with now Bears president Kevin Warren and we came up with a deal that could keep the Bears here in Chicago. But outside of that, the scrutiny is picked up.
Yeah. And to sort of build on that, I think you're right. Right. Like, this is something that he seems to be really invested in keeping the Bears here in Chicago. But I think it also runs counter to how he ran as a candidate.
His platform.
His platform. And, you know, I don't know if the mayor's office expected that this would be received well, or if they were expecting some form of blowback. But what we can know for sure now is that, like, a lot of people didn't receive it in good favor. You know, sports radio shows, you know, were up in arms over it. Sometimes Lee Bay wrote a blistering, you know, opinion last night, on Wednesday night.
Called him cheerleader in chief.
Cheerleader in chief. And, you know, that weighs a lot when we talk about a mayor who ran on, you know, not sort of like falling at the whims of billionaire interest. And, you know, the devil's in the details. While there aren't any new or increased taxes, it is taking away from a set of taxes that could benefit the city in other ways.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as I was watching the press conference, the reactions, a part of me, right, we saw this play coming. It's unfolded across the nation. This is how billionaires get cities to pay for stadiums. Playbook one, we start to look at moving elsewhere, insert Arlington Heights. Playbook two, come back to the city and say, hey, we have options both in state, out of state. What are you going to do? Right. And then playbook three, we come back with another set of beautiful renderings, which they just look at those renderings and they go, well, this is better than what we have. This is amazing. This parkland looks fantastic. Honestly, I don't know where any of the parking is going to go in these renderings, but the dome stadium, you selling me Final Fours, you selling me even bigger Beyonce concerts, you selling me the idea that I'll be able to still see the elements, see the skyline, but I'll be protected from what is a cold season for the Bears. Like, it's the exact playbook that gets ran on City time and time again. I will say, the Bears saying that they're willing to put $2 billion of private money into this, I think is a little bit different. But again, in the details, taxpayers could be on the hook in their perfect world for $2.4 billion when we're still paying off other renovations at Soldier Field. And so, like you said, I am not sure what Johnson's administration thought the reaction would be. From what I can tell, it seems that they think just the idea of the Bears not leaving for Arlington Heights was big enough to sway Chicagoans. But we live in a different day now where even a billionaire governor is saying subsidizing billionaires just ain't the move. And I think we have other priorities at the state level. How is that debt going to mature and we end up paying more than they told us in the initial press conferences? This is a long story that we've already been covering for years and will continue to cover in the months and years to come. Are you self-conscious about your smile? Do you only allow yourself a closed mouth grin? Well, with Aligner Experts, there's no reason for you to diminish your smile. As orthodontists, they have the privilege of witnessing the remarkable transformation of patients' smiles, which often translates into a profound boost in their confidence. Yet, there always seems to be a deterrent. I ain't got the time, I don't have the funds. Luckily, Aligner Experts is redefining convenient and accessible clear aligner solutions. With customizable treatments, transparent pricing, and their cutting-edge 3D scanners and dental monitoring technology, you could transform your smile through the convenience of your own schedule. Stop in at their West Loop or Lakeview Clinic today for your complimentary smile assessment. Aligner Experts, your destination for advanced clear aligner solutions. P.S., they got another clinic on the way, so stay tuned for their Old Town location. Sam, a big story that you have been following and we have been following as well is just how new arrivals have adapted to being placed in schools across the city of Chicago. Unfortunately, though, the best way to check in with families is probably to know how many you have, how many need extra resources. But some recent reporting says the way that Illinois and Chicago count how many migrant students are currently attending school is different. It means the data we have is in some ways unreliable. Can you explain why are they doing this? Why can't they agree?
Yeah, it's a problem with the way each of them are defining students and how they're able to track them. So there was a Supreme Court case in 1982 called Plyer versus Doe. And it said that like schools can't, I think it's schools and other institutions can't ask about a child's immigration status, right? You can't walk up to them and be like, hey, are you an asylum seeker? Are you a refugee? And so that kind of prevents the school from asking certain questions. But you can kind of ask students like, hey, is this your first time attending an American school? Is this your first time, at this school? You can kind of ask those things to kind of figure out things like that. So they can understand like, oh, this person hasn't been in the American school system. So there's a lot more support that they need because our school system isn't like other country school systems. So Chicago Public Schools have given us a whole bunch of different numbers over the last couple of years. So at first they were just telling us to look at the English language enrollment numbers. And they were always like, you see, we had a big jump in English language learners. But that always sounded like, we can't be clear on this because English learners also include students who were born and raised in the United States, but English might not just be their first language because it's not the language that they use in their homes. And now Chicago Public Schools have told us recently that they have enrolled about 9,000 migrant children. And they've been working with the city and certain departments at the city to kind of figure out that number. The Illinois State Board of Education says that Chicago actually has 17,000 students. Their definition is students who were born out of the country and have been attending school for less than 3 years. That's why we have this like really big gap between the two. So this is something I'm going to keep watching because I think it's important to know the numbers so you can actually know the amount of resources that you need to support these children who have gone through a lot of trauma, leaving their home countries, in some cases, leaving their own families, and coming to a new place where they don't know anybody.
It is very clear that the city and the state, I mean, need to try and find a way to build a shared definition, build a consensus plan on how they will roll out resources for families, because the state having nearly double the number of students that they are counting against for the city, I think is going to lead to even more contention between Mayor Johnson and Governor Pritzker, who just don't seem to be on the same page here. I am here again with Block Club Chicago's Manny Ramos and Chalk B Chicago's Samantha Smiley. Manny, over the last couple of weeks, we have gotten to see some of your amazing reporting around what is going on with CTA. Obviously, there have been a ton of concerns about when are we going to hire more folks? When are we going to get to pre-pandemic levels in terms of bus and train schedules? But then you wrote a story that I think stopped so many people in their tracks, no pun intended. And the title of the piece was called Death Behind the Wheel. Manny, can you walk us through this story?
Yeah, so our story, Death Behind the Wheel, sort of follows Samora Hicks, whose mother, Antia Lyons, was driving a bus, Route 112, last summer. Unfortunately, while she was working and she pulled into a terminal on 111th Street and Harding in Mount Greenwood, she suffered a cardiac emergency behind the wheel. According to the medical examiner report or investigation, I should say, her foot was still pressed on the brakes. She was about to leave the terminal. Unfortunately, it seemed like she was left in that terminal without any bus supervisors or the 24-hour CTA control center following up to see why her bus hadn't moved for an extended period of time. She missed more than 50 scheduled stops during this period. She went limp around 9:13 p.m. and an ambulance or paramedics wouldn't enter the bus until 10:08 p.m., nearly an hour after she collapsed. What we found also was that a bus that was right behind her entered the terminal but did not call for help. It took a second bus to arrive in the terminal that started knocking on the windows, knocking on the doors. And when that person realized that, you know, she was unresponsive, they ran to a nearby BP gas station where they called 911. Now, the story sort of looks at, from the perspective of the daughter, Samora Hicks, and what it was like for her to try to get information on what happened to her mother, how CTA has presented many roadblocks and made it difficult for her to find closure. At one point, you know, CTA issued out a memorial plaque of her mother's, service record. You know, she worked there for over 14 years. And on that plaque, it had the misspelling of her mom's name, another, you know, insult to injury that's really terrible. So really, we were looking at sort of like what it's like to sort of be a bus driver when you are in suffering an emergency. And CTA wouldn't answer many of our questions, and there are still lingering questions out there. Mayor Brandon Johnson recently said that there is an investigation. I've been trying to find out what that investigation entails. I haven't learned anything new yet, but I'm definitely still looking into it.
Man, when I first saw this story come across my feed, Manny, I honestly hesitated to open it for a while. I could already tell how heartbreaking this was going to be and how enraging the story is. And I mean, some of the big questions that have come in the aftermath of this is not only why didn't anyone check, why wasn't the infrastructure, the systems put in place to be able to, you know, see that a bus had not moved, to see that stops were missed, that people had not reached out in contact. But then in the aftermath, people then said, hey, this is the straw that breaks the camel's back. We have had CTA President Dorval Carter ghost city council. We've had him sit in front of city council and make excuses and promises about what the future of CTA. We've seen his paycheck increase ahead of most other city institutional leaders. And we also seen someone in Mayor Johnson who came into the office saying that, you know, his goal is to address leadership at every level. You know, the public health department, he got right on that, getting rid of the commissioner at the time. And yet somehow Dorval Carter has remained not only in this position, but keeping what seems like the confidence of the mayor, even as folks like Governor Pritzker said, yeah, this feels like the final, you know, the final blow here. Because again, the biggest problem right now at CTA is the feeling that you cannot trust the schedule in front of you, that it is not consistent. And they argue that has to do with hiring. How the hell do you think anyone is going to apply for this job, stick it out, when they already don't feel like they're being protected when they're driving their bus, that if something happens to them while they're on the job, they may essentially be ignored and left to their own devices? I mean, how has Johnson been able to stand? I'm not asking you to speculate on his ability, but your opinion. How has he been able to stand here and continue to pump confidence into Carter?
Look, I don't know Johnson's opinion on this issue. He continues to say he's evaluating. Let's remember, when he was first elected, he said he was going to give a 3-month period to evaluate all heads of departments. We are now a year in, or approaching a year, right? I think it would do much more of a service for the public if he outright just says, look, we're going to stick with Carter for the remaining time until XYZ. But he doesn't do that either. It's sort of like is manufacturing this sort of state of limbo with Dorvell Carter. When Pritzker came and is like, look, I don't have control over the board, which is the governing body of the CTA. The city of Chicago has the controlling power over who appoints that board. And what we also reported on last week was the fact that, you know, Mayor Johnson appointed a politically connected clergyman to the board, replacing another politically connected clergyman.
What's these Chicago pastors out here doing, man?
I'm not sure, you know, and our report showed that, like, you know, this specific pastor has had connections dating back to Rahm Emanuel. But it's just it comes when, you know, Pritzker has stated openly that he has lost trust in leadership, that there needs to be a quote unquote evolution of leadership. And, you know, for Johnson to then, you know, appoint another pastor to this board when the CTA is, by all accounts, struggling. This is not editorializing anything. You know, you can just sit at a platform and see that it's going to take, you know, anywhere between 12 minutes if you're lucky for a train to arrive. And there's also an approaching fiscal cliff that's happening. You know, COVID dollars are running out here as well. So this is not an issue about whether or not Dorvell Carter should remain in power. This is more so of like, what is going on that's going to help and benefit the CTA? And right now we're reporting on how a driver was left to their own accord when they were struggling to survive, quite literally, and ended up dying. And CTA was not there to help them, you know, and I think it just raises a lot of questions on where we're at today.
Sam, before we move into our good news, let's go back to some of the work happening with Illinois lawmakers. One of the things Johnson administration has done, in my opinion, a swift job on is taking control of the current Chicago school board, right? And the school board has said on a number of occasions that they would like to set a track as we move towards an elected school board that reinvests in neighborhood schools, that tries to move away from just, if you ain't got enough kids, you ain't getting enough money, right? Trying to look at schools a little more critically, a little more empathetically. But not everybody has been, you know, super engaged or super enthused with some of these moves from the school board. And Illinois lawmakers have asked themselves, do they need to step in to provide some checks and balances here? Essentially is what they're saying. And right now they're thinking about extending Chicago's school closure moratorium. Can you remind listeners what that is and why now?
Yeah. So the bill that is in Springfield that we've all been paying attention to is this one that is supposed to prevent the Chicago Board of Education from making any changes to a selective enrollment schools, but also to schools that have like magnet or gifted admissions as well. That the initial bill was just like, don't touch these schools until we have an elected school board, right? Don't touch them at all. And then I think there was a conversation in Springfield, like, why stop just at the selective enrollment schools? Why can't it be all schools? And the representative who filed the bill, which is Margaret Croak, had told me in Springfield a couple weeks back that they were having conversations about that and talking to the school district, but the school district had asked them not to propose something like that because they would like to have control over like what they do with schools. Especially as you all know, like once enrollment goes down, that's oftentimes when we see schools closing, and we know enrollment has been down since the pandemic. So, you know, all of these issues.
Because often enrollment, as you've taught us in plenty of episodes, enrollment is often tied to funding. So enrollment goes down, funding goes down. Enrollment goes down, funding goes down. And now people are saying, hey, how can we address this potentially closing schools? I mean, the school closure moratorium comes out of Chicago infamously closing 50 public schools during the Rahm Emanuel administration. And that decision was made largely between Emanuel and his board. And so you can see why. Some people like the moratorium, right? It prevents schools from being shuttered very quickly, very suddenly. And then on the other hand, you can see why the board, as it is trying to deal with tightening financial belt, trying to figure out how to allocate resources, that school closure is a tool that they want maybe available to them, if not in Chicago, maybe in other school districts around the state.
Yeah, but this one would just deal with Chicago, which is always, I know some people are like, this is weird. Why is the state lawmakers getting involved in Chicago? They have always been involved in Chicago in some way, shape, or form, y'all. but 2021, when they passed the elected school board, well, the hybrid school board bill, there was a moratorium against closing schools that was supposed to last until 2025. Now, the amendment to Croak's bill says, don't touch any school, not just the selective enrollment school. Don't touch any school until 2027 when we have a fully elected school board. And so it's going to be interesting to see like where else it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think it has a pathway to successfully make it out of the General Assembly with some of the support that I've seen from it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because on its face, people support, you know, a moratorium against school closures. People do not want to see Chicago schools largely centered in Black and brown neighborhoods closed again, continuing a cycle of disinvestment. But like you said, it's not just about that. This is politically motivated in many ways. And so when you take into account over this last year, Johnson has cleared out a board, brought in his own. They've sort of put together and put forth a more progressive agenda, one that's not set in stone, but is rhetorically clear to the rest of us. And now we see people putting in their petitions to run for their school board. This feels like as we're getting closer and closer to this election, that just more money, more influence is being poured into this race in a way that maybe we are all not paying attention to.
Yeah. And now, you know, I'm collecting the petitions that people are filing and as they're trying to get on the November ballots, and trying to really get a sense of who's running, why they're running, and who's funding them, right?
Yeah, where they money coming from?
Okay, where the money coming from? Because it does take a lot of money to have these elections. You know, it takes so much money like this to run an election like this, especially in these large districts. These are not small districts we're dealing with. They're pretty large. So, and people have to collect, like, a good chunk of signatures to even get on the ballot. So I think, while I don't know exactly what's going to happen, I would say watch to see who's funding these candidates.
Again, I want to give y'all a huge thank you for all of these amazing stories that y'all have brought, but I cannot let you go without some good news. What is carrying you through the week, bringing you into the weekend, just sort of feeling you with some good energy and good vibes right now? Manny, I want to start with you. What's your good news for our CityCast folks today?
Oh, man, ton of good news. But I think what takes the top has to be NBA playoffs. I mean, watching the Knicks sort of like just continue fighting, you know, Jamal Murray hitting buzzer beaters. I mean, it's the greatest time of the year. It's NBA playoffs.
It is. And unfortunately, the Bulls are not a part of this. We even got snubbed for most improved player in our boy, Kobe White, who had a fantastic year. But no, I agree with you. Samantha, get on in here. What is your good news?
I'm always like, I'm going to harmonize with you whenever you say it. But I'm like, let me not jump in. I will be running through the city on Saturday, trying to get to every independent bookstore that I can with my CTA bus pass. And I will start my day in Hyde Park because it's like four bookstores there. And like I said, I am trying to get that 10% discount.
You got
to
hit at least 10 bookstores to get that 10% off of the 46 that are involved in the Chicagoland bookstore crawl.
I know. And I, let me tell you, I am looking and trying to figure it out how I'm going to do it, especially on the bus. But most of the bookstores that I like and know about, they're pretty much all along the green line. So I think I got a way to make it happen.
Come on, and you might as well push the 15 and get that 15% off. One more piece of good news before we get out of here. And mine is usually like an event, something you could do in Chicago, but this one is fully personal. April is my birthday month. My birthday is April 30th next week. And so I'm headed out of town tonight to go to New Orleans just to relax for a few days. I've sort of been doing my New Orleans primer over the month. If people remember that that April monthly guide that we did at the top of the month, you know, I've gotten in my jazz clubs, I've gotten in my po' boys and my gumbo. Now it's time to get down there and get my char grill oysters. And so I'm very excited for this. April is also full of birthdays for so many of my friends. And so I just want to give a sort of big happy birthday to all of my friends, folks like my boy Chris, my homie John, my homegirl Lauren and Natalie, my boy Darius. Our former executive producer, Carrie Shepherd's birthday is coming up, and so many other people I love, both in my family, like my uncle and other people. And so shout out to all of my April birthdays, and the most important birthday in April, my own. And so again, I want to give a huge thank you to our guest today from Chalk Beach, Chicago, Samantha Smiley. Samantha, thank you for always making time, my friend.
Thank you for having me again.
And I had to give another huge thank you from Block Club Chicago, Manny Ramos. Thank you for making time for us.
Appreciate y'all.
One more thing before we get out of here. I got to give a huge thank you to the people who make CityCast Chicago and Hey Chicago possible. Our executive producer is Simone Alisea. Our producer is Michelle Navarro. Our newsletter editor is Sydney Madden. Additional help from roving editor Adrian Gonzalez. The music we all love is from All the Kimonos, Mark Greenberg from the Mayfair Workshop, and the homie Sam Thousand. And my last thank you, like every single week, is for you. The people who listen to CityCast Chicago, who read Hey Chicago, who are sharing us with your friends and family to help grow our listenership, who are signing up to become members, who are sending us all of their episode ideas at 773-780-0246. And if you are doing none of those additional things and all you do is listen on 2x speed every 3 or 4 days, I still want to say thank you. However you engage with CityCast Chicago and Hey Chicago, we appreciate it. And we hope that you'll join us back here on Monday. We're gonna be here, and we'll talk to you then. Peace.